It's not one that for whatever reason jumps out to me. I'm very aware of the second coming. I believe in the second coming. I believe we should be ready for the second coming. But I, you know, my favorite parable in this chapter is the last one that also has to do with the second coming, the parable of the sheep and the goats. And for whatever reason, you know, this is one that's never really stood out for me. But sometimes, you know, by doing a series, it kind of forces you to give attention to scriptures that maybe otherwise I might pass over. But you all probably remember the story, and I'll read it and then we'll talk about it. It says, "The kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flask of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a shout, 'Look, here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him.' All those bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish one said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise replied, 'No, there will not be enough for you and for us. You had better go to the dealers and buy some for yourselves.' And while they went to buy it, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went with him into the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the other bridesmaids came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he replied, 'Truly I tell you, I do not know you. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know the day or the hour.'" And so you've got this wedding procession that's to escort the bride and groom. You have all these bridesmaids. It says virgins, but these virgins go out to wait for the bridegroom to show up because they're going to be part of this wedding procession. And they take their lamps, and as my understanding, this is not the typical word you find like in Matthew chapter 5, talking about your lamp on a lampstand. This is the word, it could be translated torches. So they have their lamps, their torches or something to go out to meet the bridegroom. But some take oil for their torches or their lamps, and some do not. And if you do not take oil, this torch or this lamp would burn out very quickly. And it so happens the bridegroom is delayed. I think the NIV says something along the line that it says a long time in coming. The bridegroom is a long time in coming. And I think that is the idea. There's some delay. It's not quite when they expect. They're waiting for a long time. But you have this bridal procession, and for whatever reason, we don't know, but the groom is delayed. But then at midnight, after all have gone to sleep, they've gotten drowsy, they've fallen asleep, waiting for him to come. At midnight, the call comes, the bridegroom is coming. He's getting ready to arrive. And at that point, the virgins that are not prepared want to borrow some oil, but there's not enough to go around. And so they end up running into town to try to get more. But in the meantime, the bridegroom comes, and those that were ready joined in the procession and the wedding banquet, and we are told the door is shut. And when the others come back, they are too late, and they are told, "Truly I tell you, I do not know you." And so we're told there in verse 13 to keep awake, for we don't know the day or the hour when the Lord comes. I think with parables, one mistake we can make is by trying to read too much in all the details. And I'll give you one example of that in the story. Some are bothered that some of the bridesmaids don't want to share the oil with the other bridesmaids. The point is there's not enough oil to go around, and it's not saying that Christians should be selfish. It's just a story. 5 are prepared, 5 aren't prepared. There's not enough oil for all 10. That's the reality in the story. But, you know, but anyway, the key point of the parable is that some were prepared for the bridegroom to come, and some were not prepared. Now, one of the earlier things I will say about this is it's not a parable to tell us to know when Jesus will return. In fact, in the context, it's very opposite. In the story, as I mentioned earlier, the bridegroom is delayed. They don't know when he's going to finally show up. And he comes in the middle of the night when both the wise and the foolish ones have already gone to sleep. I think the background is actually, if you know, they always say context in the Bible, but this is a good example of it. Go back to chapter 24, the way that chapter 24 ends. It says in verse 36, in the latter part of chapter 24, "But about that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father." And it's kind of interesting, not even Jesus knows when he's going to be sent back, according to Matthew chapter 4. But then if you read that, so what happens? Life goes on. He talks about that they're eating, they're drinking, they're married, they're being given in marriage. And in fact, this is exactly the case. Since Jesus has left and ascended into heaven, what's happened? Life goes on. People marry, they have children, some of those, you know, they grow old, they die, new children come, new people are married, and the cycles of life go on. You have work to go to, you have, you know, you go to sleep at night, you wake up in the morning, you eat and visit with family. We have 4th of July's and Christmases and things like that. Life continues to go on. But then he goes on and explains, you know, if you knew he was coming, if you knew the exact day, he says, understand this. If the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and his house would not be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at the unexpected hour. And the point of that is because of that, we have to be ready all the time. Because we don't know when he's coming. And then so the question comes up, well, what does it mean to be ready? And I think you get to the very end there of chapter 24, right before chapter 25. And of course, the chapter divisions in the Bible come much later. Matthew didn't write in chapters. He didn't say chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. These divisions in the chapter come much later than the original documents. But at the very end here, right before the parable of the 10 bridesmaids, you have this story about the faithful or unfaithful slave. It says in verse 45, "Who is the faithful and wise slave whom his master has put in charge of his household?" And then he goes on and says, "Blessed is the slave who the master finds at work when he arrives. Truly, I tell you, he's going to put that slave in charge of all his possessions." So the slave who stays busy and is doing what he's supposed to do when the master returns, is there any problem? There's no problem. But then he says, "But if that wicked slave says to himself, 'My master is delayed. My master's delayed. He's not coming back anytime soon.' So what does he do? He begins to beat," verse 49, "and he begins to beat his fellow slaves and eats and drinks with drunkards. The master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect, in an hour that he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces," and so on and so forth, where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. But which slave was ready for his master to come? And what does it mean to be ready? Being ready does not mean he was constantly looking out the window, seeing if his master was coming down the pathway. I actually think in this story, Probably it was the unfaithful slave who was looking out the window every once in a while to make sure his master's, you know, kind of keeping alert. But it's the one who is ready is the one who's doing his master's will. Amen. Doing what he's supposed to do. And it didn't matter when that master showed up because he was ready. He was doing what he was supposed to do. But it's the one that says, you know, my master's delayed. He's gone for a long time. And starts saying, I can do whatever I want to do. Abuses his fellow slaves. Hangs out with drunkards and things like that. That's the one who's not prepared when his master shows back up. And my question that I meant to ask and I kind of passed over is, did either one of them know when the master was coming? And the answer is no. Neither one of the slaves had any idea, but the faithful and wise slave was doing what he was supposed to do. The unfaithful one started doing what he wanted to do. And so then we come back to where we started in the very next section in Matthew, the beginning of chapter 25, with the wise and foolish virgin. And this language of wise and foolish comes up for the first time in Matthew at the end of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7. The one who hears Jesus' words and does them is like the wise person who built his house upon the rock. And the one who hears Jesus' words and does not do them is like the foolish man who built his house upon the sand. And of course, the wise man who lives by Jesus' words, the rains and the floods come, and what happens? The house is fine. The house is good to go. But the one, the foolish person who builds his house upon the sand, when rain and floods come, is he prepared? He's not prepared at all. So I think the thing that separates, the main point we're supposed to get about the thing that separates the foolish and the wise virgins or maidens or whatever you want to say there, the Greek word is virgin, but one group is prepared and the other group is not. And I don't think this parable tells us what it means to be prepared. Some of these other parables in the chapter do. Rather, it tells us the importance of being prepared. Being prepared has nothing to do with staying awake in a literal sense. Because if you read the parable, actually in the parable, the bridegroom's delayed. They didn't know when he was going to show up. And all 10 of these bridesmaids went to sleep. They were all asleep when, and they are all awakened by the announcement the bridegroom is coming. But some were prepared. They had the oil they needed for when the bridegroom came, and some did not. And I think a key point in this parable is for those who were not prepared, it was too late when the bridegroom showed up. And I think that maybe the parable is telling us that when the Lord comes, it's too late to get ready for his coming. If the Lord comes today, it's too late to repent and turn to God. Either you're ready or you are not. And I want to talk about that a little bit later, but I want to come to a phrase here that he uses here in Matthew 25 that's actually kind of a very similar phrase that Jesus used again in Matthew chapter 7, the Sermon on the Mount. Because those bridesmaids that didn't have the oil, they go to get the oil, and then they come back, and they say there in verse 11, Lord, Lord, open to us. And listen to what this bridegroom says. He says, truly I tell you, I do not know you. This reminds me of chapter 7, verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only those who do the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many deeds of power in your name? And it says, I will declare to them, I never knew you. Go away from me, you evildoers. And I admit I'm getting on a little tangent here, because actually the Greek says workers of lawlessness. And I want to talk about that word for a second, because there's probably a translation out there. If somebody sees one, then tell me, because I'd like to see it. That translates it more literally here. I think it's kind of interesting. It fits with the Sermon on the Mount as a whole. And I know I'm on a tangent, but it's the word there is anomia, or you could say anomos. Of course, Greek words have different endings. Nomos is the Greek word for law. And anomos is the opposite, the one who doesn't obey God's law. And it's kind of like we have the word today, moral, and we have the word amoral. A moral person lives by morality. An amoral person doesn't live by moral actions. Or we have the word social and asocial. You know, a social person is one who interacts with others. An asocial person is one who avoids others, that's not